access number 28664, Mr. David Butler, Reel 3. Now, we're going through a typical day while you were at HMS Rally Shore Station at Tor Point, between June and December 52, where we are in. Now, you might have had education classes, you might have had marching up and down on the square.
Yeah.
What else?
You'd have sport.
Now, you know, your sport
was mainly football and cricket. You would have the assault course.
Hang on, do the sport first. I mean, did you get involved? You were keen on sport.
I was keen on sport. I never got involved as such that I was picked to play for HMS Rally, because I think the main team there was the ship's company that used to run the place. They was the main people. We was just people who used to be given. We had our boots with us, our sporting gear with us, and you had sports gear in your kit, and then you went out and you had a game on the sports field in the afternoon, or a game in the summer. You played cricket. You might go on a run around the camp. We did have one run when we went out onto the main road and over the what I call the moors. And that nearly coofed me, I think about 5 miles, I think. And I'd never run 5 miles in my life. I used to run around the race course, but that was just a jolly. This was intensive running. I wasn't used to that. Yeah.
But not many cross-country runs, though, from the same.
No, I suppose you had about three. But then you had one major one at the end, when you had to be in such a certain time. We had an assault course.
Now tell me about that. What was the assault course like? Well,
they used to have a river running at the bottom of the parade ground, and you had to wade across that to start with. When you left the parade ground, you went down the slope and running, and then you went up over these downs or moors, whatever. It wasn't like it was like the Royal Marines or anything, had it, where you crawled through tunnels or anything, but it was up and down. You climbed the odd rope walk. You had the rope thing where you had to go across, then you had to swing across another brook or a bit of a river, and then you came back, and then you had to, then when you got back eventually after about 2 miles, you then had to do the walk where you had the across the river onto the parade ground, where you had the rope, you held on the top and you walked along the bottom rope, and you know how that goes, and you had to do that. I fell in once on that. Yes, and that was it basically. But it wasn't as strenuous as what, say, the Army or the Royal Marines used to have. I'm sure of that.
So that's PT. That's another thing. What else?
PT, yeah. I used to enjoy PT because it was good. You know, you had your physical training instructors, and you never done it in the gym. We never had a gym. We had you done it in the drill shed. Same as if it was raining, you'd done your marching and your rifle training in the drill shed when we got through to the rifle section. Your first 6 weeks, you see, you never really touched the rifle. And then until you'd passed out your basic training. And then you might have an afternoon where you're learning to do the dobing, the washing.
Now, tell me about that, because that's something people always forget about. How did you learn to wash
clothes? Well, this is the only time I fell out with my instructor, actually. Because sometimes my mother used to make us do the washing, you see, as kids. She'd say, you know, you can get the fire going and then you can give me a hand with the washing. So I wasn't too bad on that. But I'd never done it in a bucket before. Now, we all had, each hut had half a dozen buckets. Some had, and we had sinks in the washroom, big sinks in the washroom. And we had to get our underwear. We got told not to wash our underwear. We got told that we'd be washing on about second or third day, something like that. And then we would be having a lesson in dobing. And I was given a bucket. And some of them had sinks, and some of us had buckets. And I said, you don't expect me to wash. And he come in and he said, what on earth are you doing? And all I was doing basically was doing it, rubbing it, and then doing it, and then dunking it. But I wasn't rubbing it really to the PO's expectations. What do you think you're doing that? I said, I'm doing the washing. You're not at home now. And he said, you're doing it properly. This is... And I had a big confrontation with it. And I said, so where am I supposed to put all this washing when I've wanted and all that jazz? And And he said, just calm down. He told me to calm down and whatever, and not be so erratic and nasty. And he told me then that I ring it up, put it on one side, empty the water, get some clean water and rinse it that way. And that's how you do it, he said. But some of them hadn't got a clue. Some of them just hadn't got a clue. Because they'd never been to camp and things like that. That's what a lot of it was all about, going to camp and doing your own washing and things like that. There was no washing machines or anything. And I spent throughout my life in the Navy, I always done my washing in a bucket. I never ever sent it to the laundry, like we had on ships later on. I think the Vanguard.
We'll come back to that. Yeah. So any other training sessions you can remember? This is just basic training, so there's no stuff.
Yeah,
no
engineering training yet at all.
Seamanship training.
Yes, you had to learn to tie knots with ropes. She was given a length of rope, and then the petty officer who was training us, they was all seamen in the first 6 weeks. They was all seamen, and they would teach you how to tie knots. Seamanship, bollards, masts, and all.
How far did they go with knots and splices? Because you know you were going to be a stoker. How much knots and splices did you need?
I think you needed the basic half a dozen. I couldn't even tell you what they are now. Well, the reef knot, bowline. Oh, no, I couldn't tell you what they are now, because I was never very good at them anyway.
And what about splicing? Because that's not so...
No, that's... If I remember... I think we did have an... We had an exhibition of splicing. But that's more in the seamanship line. I think we had an exhibition of splicing by one of our... one of our seaman POs.
So more to show you what could be done,
yeah,
rather than get you to do it.
Yes, yeah. We wouldn't be required in the engineering branch or in the non-technical branch to do anything like that.
And what about things like the rules of the road? You know, on the sea, not on the road. I mean,
we did go out in a whaler a couple of times, which was a ship that they carry on, a boat that they carry on the ship, and I enjoyed that.
Was that learning to row?
That was learning to row a boat, yeah. That was learning to row a boat. And eventually, we put a team in to a regatta. And we done well. I don't think we won it, but we done well.
That was while you were at...
That was while we was in HMS Raleigh. And we had... yes, we did. We put a boat... We had a whaling race.
Now, what do you remember of that and preparing for it?
We was down there, we was down on a ship for a week. You'd done a week on this ship, and I think it was HMS Dunkirk was the ship, to learn about boilers and engines and what have you, and to see them actually in action. And whilst we was down there, we got a message saying that the air class was going to put in go into the whaling yacht regatta that was taking place in Plymouth Harbour, and air team entered it. But I don't think we trained in the dog watches after we'd finished work, basically in the evenings. We before we had our supper, we used to train in the dog watches for about an hour. But it was mainly up at when we was back at HMS Raleigh that we used to train on the river just outside the establishment. That used to run up alongside the establishment. And I used to love that. Because I used to, as a boy, you see, I used to help a chap, a friend of my dad's. He worked for the council, but he used to run the boat thing down at Warwick, on the Warwick Park there. And me and another lad used to go down and help him, mainly at weekends, but in their school holidays. And sometimes it involved going out and rowing a boat. Getting a rowing boat out and fetching somebody else who had broke down in one of the motorboats back. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
What other seamanship were you doing? I mean, did you learn to box a compass and things like that? Or
no, we didn't. No, we didn't do that sort of thing. No, we didn't do that. It was just basic knots, the ship itself, telling us all about different parts of the ship.
What did that entail?
That entailed telling you about the bridge, what was in the bridge, and that was mainly from a photo. The engine room and boiler rooms, you got that factually when you moved into the technical department for training.
But that's not in the first bit. Yeah.
That's not in the first 6 weeks, no. And the masts, the radio, the funnel, the quarterdeck. You got told about the quarterdeck because it used to have a brass strip across it. And every time you cross that brass strip, and they had one in HMS Raleigh, as a matter of fact, you went into the captain's office or into that section, you always had to salute before you went over the quarterdeck, which was this piece of strip brass. That happened on HMS Vanguard as well, which I joined. And general good manners of behaving on a ship.
So that's what about weapons and training, rifle training, things like that? I know it came in the second 6 weeks. We might as well pick it up now. What sort of weapons training did you get?
Just the rifle. We had the rifle. I think it was just a rifle, and that was shoulder arms, slope arms, present arms, marching with it.
But I mean, as a weapon, did you shoot it or?
Yeah, we fired. We used to go down the range and shoot it, and fire.
But were they trying to make you a decent shot, or were they just going through the motions?
No, they all tried to make you a decent shot. It don't matter how poor you are. They tried to. I suppose it happens now. They tried to teach you to be a good shot. Mainly because I suppose in some respects they might find a budding champion. Even in them days, they was always looking for the creme de la creme of any support or things like that. You know, I suppose if I'd have been good at football, see, I might have made the base team or something like that. You never know. They're always looking out for people who could shoot.
What were you like as a shot?
Average.
Now, why average. Do you think you were only average? What is it that makes people good or bad or whatever, middling?
They've got a good eye. I think the main thing is to have a good eye. And you'll always have somebody that'll look at something and see it different to each other. And then you've got your country lads who go out shooting. Or I mean, I used to go beating. One of the things I used to do as a lad was the beating for the Lord Warwick and his friends. And we used to go over the field, but I never fired a gun. But there was children, their children, Lord Warwick's friends and children, they was probably taught how to shoot. So you might get a marksman out of them, you see.
Now, were you actually learning bayonet as well, or was it just a rifle?
You had the bayonet on, but it was only for dress rehearsals and things like that. You never taught it to, you know, to go at anybody with it. Tell a lie, did I? I think we had one session on the range at the sandbag on two bits of string. I think we had one session, yes, if I remember rightly. No, I did. We did have a session at it, but there was no "you're doing that wrong" type of thing.
Now, any other sorts of training you were doing?
Ironing. You had to do your ironing. You had to learn how to...
Tell me about... I mean, I know it sounds daft, but how did you have to learn to iron? I mean...
The petty officer done the usual. He set all the iron up, the ironing board, and we was lucky we had ironing boards. And then he showed you... He got the temperature and spit on the iron. And then he said, right, that's hot enough or whatever. And then you used to do the ironing, and he showed you how to put your creases in your trousers. Because you had to have the 7 bands on your trousers in them days. And then an iron your white fronts, your bit of silk that you used to go around on your collars, and your underwear. And he said, some people, I can remember me, I always remember, he said, some people will, as daft as it may sound, iron the socks. And that tickled us, because none of us had ever thought of ironing socks. But you had to iron a lot of your kit because of kit. Oh, that was another thing. Kit mushness. How to lay your kit out.
Well, funnily enough, that's just what going to ask, how did you prepare for a kit inspection?
You
that's getting everything ready and that's how you
getting,
laid it out.
That's getting everything. Well, this, once again, this goes to our PO trainers. They taught us how to iron. Then they taught us how to fold it up and put it in our lockers. And then we had we'd have another day, I think it was a morning, where they laid the kit out on a bed, piece by piece. Then you went and got that same piece of kit and you laid it on your bed. And your sheets, they told you about your sheets and your blankets and your pillow and everything. And they done it, you done it. And you followed them. And then when they came in and looked it, and I don't think any of us got it right. I think just what they think. And then so we all done it again. And I think we might have had two or three days about that.
But what level of bull was it? You know, on the boots, for instance. I mean, how polished?
You kept
the army.
You didn't do that. You kept, all we had to do was to keep them bright and clean. Yeah, that had to be done every night. And so was your plimsolls. If you'd been on a salt course or something like that, you had to, and you washed every night and you shaved, and you had to do your laundry every night. Your Dobian in them days. There was no bull, as far as I could recall, on the boots, because you never had the toe cap on air boots. We just had the flat sort of everyday shoe thing. We never had toe caps like the army or the RAF.
So there's nothing too over the top about it. It was just sensible.
It was sensible. Well, I considered sensible anyway. I thought, I used to think, thank God we ain't got a spit and polish with it. You know, because I could never. Well, I suppose you'd have to if you was in the forces and they told you.
Once it got going, after they'd trained you to lay your bed out and your kit out, I mean, you know, another thing is, would they tip it over if it was wrong, or what would they do?
No. They just say, now lay it out properly. And then they would more than likely go and get a drawing. I think one of them had a draw, and he'd hang up there. That's how you do it, he used to say. And that's how it went down. Yes.
In the end, helpful.
Oh, yeah. They were two good POs. They were strict.
Let's talk about how you got on with them, your instructors. How did you? I know you had a row with one of them.
About laundry, washing.
Something and nothing.
Yeah.
What were they like as a whole?
I considered them very good. We seemed to get on all right with them. I don't think anybody really fell out with them. I think we had two blokes go home, two, perhaps three blokes go home, because they was homesick. But they was, I consider them, I can see them now. One was a little fella, he was the boxer, bantamweight boxer of the Far East. And the other one was about a foot taller. And they was both slim built, smart, but they was, I liked them. I liked them better than the chief stoker we had who taught us our engineering.
And they treated you fair then?
Yeah. They wasn't bullshit or anything like that, you know. You got told off. If you'd done something wrong, they'd tell you off.
But fairly.
But yeah. There was no, I don't think any of us said, well, you know, you'll have to go and see your divisional officer. I don't think any of us got put in front of our divisional officer.
Was there a lot of swearing and shouting while they were doing it?
No. No. Swearing wasn't one of the things that comes to my mind.
Now, how did you get on with the lads? That's the other thing. The other recruits. I mean,
all right. Well, we all had arguments. If something, you know, where opinions are. People will be opinionated, and. Oh, we had one bloke, he come from Nether Wallop in Hampshire. He come from Nether Wallop. He was a farm lad. He was argumentative. And he was one of these chaps that when we was on the parade ground, he was a left foot, left arm bloke. It took him about a fortnight to get marching properly. But he was an argumentative bloke.
But it come to blows, or was it just?
I think I can't remember a fight. Can't just remember a fight. I had an argument with a bloke from Manchester, the one who cried. I know I had an argument with him.
What about? What was it?
I don't know. But I can remember having an argument with him. I called him a toffee-nosed bastard. And I can't remember what it was about, but it was about summit. It was to do with Kit, I know that. It was something to do with their Kit.
But there was no bullying from the sound of it.
No, there was no. I can't say there was any bullying. The only, yeah, that'll come a bit later on. I must remember that.
We normally ask. The other thing is, what about a canteen? Was there
There was a naffy there, and
what did the naffy canteen offer you?
Cakes, tea. I don't think we was allowed alcohol.
You'd be underage, I presume.
No, yeah, but some of them was over 18, you see. Some of them was over 18. Because we had national servicemen as well in. Now I come to think of it. And there was another bloke from Essex. And his name began with Basfield, from Essex. He was the first national serviceman I'd ever come across.
So what was the canteen like? What would it be? Okay. What do you get in there?
We had, I think we could just get bottles of pop, cakes, tea, coffee, wimpy sort of burgers, beef burgers and what have you, chips. You could get meals, same as if you was in the kitchen, but it would be on smaller portions. But we never had a lot. We never had a lot to spend. I think, if I remember rightly, my first pay. Did we get it once a fortnight or once a month? No, once a fortnight. Once a fortnight. My pay was £1 a week, and I had to send home 10 shillings.
Why?
I've got to say, Navy rules and regulations. While I was in training. In my first 6 weeks, and I think that all the time in Raleigh, I don't really know, but I had to send home 10 shillings. There was 10 shillings for you, 10 shillings for your parents. And this was something that we we was told to do. Yeah, we was told to do this.
What would you spend your pay on? There isn't a lot there, but money went a lot further then, but... Still not much.
Just cakes and something in the canteen. And toothpaste. You had to buy your soap and your toothpaste. You got issued with soap when you first joined. Toothbrush, comb, soap. Can't remember shaving gear, whether we did or not. Airbrush. Scrubbing brush. Little scrubbing brush. Polish, shoes and brushes, black brushes. So you had to buy, you had to buy shoe polish and things like that, you see. But that tension has got last year, a fortnight.
Now, what about, after 6 weeks, was there any sort of assessment? What happened after 6 weeks?
You had a little passing out parade.
What was that like?
That was mainly like the thing, you got your number ones on. With your lanyard and all that, and prior to that, I'm jumping the gun. Prior to that, you've done about an hour's training, 2 hours training on the parade ground with your rifle doing drill. Then you was given 15 minutes to get from the parade ground to your hut to get into your number ones, your best at. And then regroup on the parade ground and stand by your rifle, which was always laying on the ground. You'd leave it there when you went to get changed. And then the training commander, the training commander, he was a man that always dragged his sword. But our divisional training commander was a Lieutenant Commander Twyford something. He walked on with our division officer. POs used to call us to attention and one thing and another. Then our division officers would inspect us. Then our divisional divisional commander, who was a lieutenant commander, he would inspect us, and then he would report to the training commander, who was brought onto the parade ground. He used to walk down the thing on the parade ground, and we used to then march past him. And that was our little sort of leaving your basic training.
That's after 6. So that'd be back end of July.
Yeah, that would be the back end of July. And I think we went on leave then. I think you come on leave then, and we went for a fortnight. And we hadn't been out at all. Remember, we hadn't been out in 6 weeks. We hadn't been ashore or nothing.
We hadn't mentioned that, but that's yes. We weren't allowed out.
No, we weren't allowed out. And I don't even know when we was allowed out, when we was in engineering training.
So you went on leave, and then when you came back, what's the difference?
And then we went, instead of going to the, then when we came back, instead of going to the right-hand side of the camp, we went to the left-hand side. We went into, we reported to the regulating office, and the chap stacked in there, he said, right, you're in hut so-and-so, he used to say. I think I was 28, hut 28. And then we went down to, no, we stayed in double beds. We stayed in double beds. But we had wardrobes as well, as lockers. We had a little locker and then wardrobes.
And now you start your technical training.
And then we started our technical
now
training.
Now, take me through that. We're very interested in technical, especially as you went a long way in this. How did they start your training as a stoker? I mean, you must have known some of it from your experience in the railways, but what was the start for you? What did they start you off on?
The start off was the layout of the ship, because you're not only the stokers, you see, you're the main firefighters of a ship. So that was the main thing, is that he had a drawing on the board and he told you all about the different compartments. And he used to say, seamen's, that's their thing. And then they used to tell you all about this. He said, we'll come on to it later on. He said, but all this ship is yours. He said, because you are the firefighting team. And then we went, and then we went into the boiler room. And then he put a drawing up of the boiler room and showing us the different machinery in the boiler, telling us about the different machinery in the boiler room. And then we done the engine room, steering gear, diesels and refrigeration. Then we done all the pipe systems that runs through the ship, because all the pipe ships belong to the engine room branch, because of the fire main and the steam pipes that go from one little compartment to another, even if it's up in the bows, and it's a steam pipe is required, it belongs to us, as they used to say. And then we went through each individual machinery. The main thing they used to talk about was the boilers, because that was until you got onto a ship or something, your main thing was the boilers. That was your main concern about lighting them. There they used to, and the tubes, the boiler drum, the three drums. Of course, we had three drums in them days on the boilers.
Well, can you explain what was the setup of a boiler in those days? The naval boiler,
when I first joined, you had three drums. You had a top drum, which was the steam drum, and then you had tubes coming down, sets of tubes coming down to two at the bottom, both one on the left-hand side, one on the right-hand side, and they was the water drums. And then in the middle, in between all three, was the furnace, which was covered by a steel plate, for want of a better description, a steel plate with holes in.